The Millennial Express, plowing ever onward through a northern winter. From station to station, bringing the dissident right to you.
Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2023. I'm now here with representatives from the Old Glory Club. Now, the Old Glory Club was founded just over a year ago. I'll ask each of you to define it in your own ways. I should say that Ryan Turnipseed and Charlemagne have appeared on Millennial before individually, but Red Hawk has not, so welcome to Millennial for the first time, Red Hawk. Would you like to define, introduce yourself briefly first so that people know who you are?
Yeah, certainly. So I was kind of a lurker on dissident right circles starting in around 2017, 2018 thereabouts, and then really actually became active in the community around 2020 through a mutual friend of ours, Academic Agent. And my intellectual foundation is actually from the Manosphere in those circles. And to make a long story short, I ended up getting in contact with all these guys, and we ended up meeting at various American events, and we decided to found the Old Glory Club. It was a very interesting set of circumstances. Actually, the idea germinated while we were all sitting in the after party in Charlemagne's hotel room when we booked out an entire floor of this Tennessee hotel. So it was like 30 guys packed into this small little hotel room at like 3 o'clock in the morning. And we kind of just thought to ourselves, well, we need to do more of this. And that's basically where it started right there. So what the OGC is now is, an organization, an actual 501c8 fraternal organization that is, legal in law in the United States here. And we're setting up our chapters all across the country right now to try and get more of our guys to meet up in real life, to form relationships, to, mentor each other and all those good things to, brace ourselves for what we assume is coming down the pipeline here, which is not going to be good for us in the country. So I guess that's my basic pitch right here. And I'll pass the ball to the vice president, Mr. Ryan Turnipseed.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I can only echo what Red Hawk said about the OGC. And just for the ends that we are specifically working towards, the main principle, the guiding principle, is that we want to form a network of mutual aid for our guys. Basically, that's something that is sorely missing. There's basically no social net or community help or anything like that for any of our guys if something bad is to happen to them. In fact, there's typically the opposite. If something very bad happens to anyone deemed too far to the right, as everyone knows by now, you will have everything that the media and the state can set on to you and worse. So we are specifically working to counteract that specific mechanism. We're trying to make sure that everyone can help each other out, that we can form some sort of independence and work towards our own productive ends on the right. So it's I would say it's very unique in that regard, something that sets us apart from everyone else, certainly. That's all that I can really add.
Yeah, excellent. That sounds good. And Charlemagne, you are one of the founding members.
Yes, all of us are. There are actually quite a few founding members. It's a fairly numerous organization just to start out with. And, as the others said, it more or less came out from us meeting at conferences, and we quite enjoyed each other's company. And not only did we realize we wanted more of that, but we wanted other men to have the opportunity to do so as well, without necessarily being, content creators or, whatever we are calling ourselves these days. We want all Americans to be able to have this opportunity to meet other peoples in real life in their locality, and primarily have a fraternal organization that they can associate with each other in, and both help each other out if there's trouble, whatever it happens to be. It's
you know, very much up to the individual chapters, how they specifically operate. They have a few responsibilities to the parent organization that Red Hawk mentioned, but we're very interested in people in Heritage Americans sort of doing their own thing and making their own friends in their particular states and localities.
The landscape today for a young white, well, a white American male of any age is not what it was 50 years ago, and or certainly not 150 years ago. And 50 years ago, it was actually rather deceptive, wasn't it? Because even by then, they were already losing control, losing ownership of their country. And this has become this reality has become much more obvious in recent years. And I'm guessing that is part of what makes an organization like this necessary. Kind of like would you say it's like the Red Hawk? You can take this question.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's definitely looking very bleak for your, you know, a straight white man, as we know, in the United States of America these days. And, you know, there's been a lot of discussions on millennial already this year about, you know, reminiscing for times past. I know, Woz, you've talked about a lot about the 90s and such. And, you know, we've definitely...
Sorry.
There's a lot of people have been talking about it. And, you know, we ourselves have been talking about it as well, you know, in our own private chats and such, just how much America has changed radically in such a short period of time. Now, and yes, you do need these in life organizations here to, you know, get people together and to, you know, I got an example here in my own life. You know, our friend Prudentialist, another founding member, he's constantly talking about this idea, like, what is the, you know, ideal for, you know, the white man in this day for, you know, the progressive left, right? What is your ideal that you can, you know, strive yourself to be? And basically what it's left at this point is to become a troon. Basically, that's all that's left for you. And and funny enough, you know, I've talked about this in our own private chats, but I've had two people, like first cousins of mine, come out as trans this year. You know,
see, that 20 years ago, that would have been absolutely unimaginable. Even to encounter a trans person was like a once in a... If you lived in a big city, you might see one person in a year and you wouldn't know for sure, but you would think, oh, that woman had broad shoulders or something like that. To have two people in one family is just incredible. There's absolutely no question that this is something that it's a fad, but it's, as you said, it's really the only way that you can get away with being white.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in my own case here, one of the cases is an autistic girl, which is what makes it so much more horrible and why, you know, the holidays have been rough this year for me. But also, like, the other one is a well-educated, you know, a guy who went to an Ivy League university, you know, had, a two-parent household, you know, like everything that should have been going for him. But no, he's like just come out as, you know, a troon at this point. Now everybody's got to bow down to it and everything, you know, and that's the kind of thing that we're trying to fight here, you know, in our own organization, you know, and we have different issues to tackle with somebody like, you know, in the UK. America is a massive country. It'll take you 3 days to drive across it, you know, if you're going full bore from Maine to California. We really can't set up like one central hub. I was over in the UK earlier this year, and I met with a bunch of the basket weavers in London. I met with the Lotus Eaters guys and such, and they're kind of setting up their central hubs in and around, you know, London, Swindon, a bunch of other areas. And it's a lot easier for those guys to meet regularly because, you know, you got the train system, everyone's kind of centrally located, but it's just not like that in America. We have different problems here. And so we thought to ourselves, well, what's the best way to combat this issue of, you know, scale and everything? We all can't just, you know, pick up everything and move to one central location together. You know, I mean, the economy is hell right now. Inflation sucks, you know, so what are we going to do about this? And so we're like, okay, well, what if we found these chapters, like, you know, fraternal organizations under our banner, throughout the country. And we have two of them officially incorporated right now. We have a couple more underway here that we're looking to, you know, launch in the new year here with more afterwards, after we've, you know, squared away all the kinks and everything. But yeah, we got one in Virginia now and one in New England, another in the works in Florida and all across the country. And this is what we want to do, put our guys in contact with each other, you know, to make it through this, you know, the ashes of civilization, as we all like to call it.
Yeah. Is it, the obvious comparison is something like the Freemasons. as a complete layman just coming to this, you know, knowing nothing.
Now you just triggered turnip seed there, is why I'm laughing.
Yeah, this has been a fun internal argument over what form we should take. The Freemasons have come up every once in a while.
Charlemagne, why did you burst out laughing? Tell me.
Oh, because, well, as Turnip Seed said, just sort of a internal discussion over what sort of terminology we should use in regards to the concept of a fraternity. And of course, we have a few Catholic members, you know, including myself and the Distributist and a few others. And obviously, Freemasonry is a big no-no zone. So we don't want, it's a heresy, to be less glib about it. So, yeah, we're a fraternal organization. We try to not use the word fraternity, and we especially don't compare it to Freemasonry. Although, you know, I suppose it's a fair comparison for what we're going for, minus all of the esoteric and heretical stuff. We're simply, you know, groups of men who enjoy each other's company, help each other with whatever problems we might have, that sort of thing. I mean, what we're about is, you know, this is not a political organization. This is really sort of a brand new type of concept. We're not a media organization, although we do put out media to financially support our operations. We are a first and foremost just a means by which Americans can actually associate with each other and accomplish something, whatever it happens to be that they want, that is, you know, within the interest of the United States of America from a patriotic perspective. That's what we're really about.
So it's not tied to any particular Christian denomination.
Well, this is one of the beautiful things about how the Old Glory Club has really unfolded in the last year and a half, basically, is we have our leadership is for lack of a better word, and don't take the baggage with it. It's extremely diverse in the sense that we have Protestants, Catholics, people whose religions are unknown. We have some people that are pagans in the leadership. Christians making up a strong majority, but that's not unified as most people on the right know. And we are also geographically scattered. We have Yankees up from New England. We have diehard Southerners. We have people from the West Coast, the Heartlands, the Midwest. And despite all of this, I think that we work together better than most other just organizations in general. It's been something quite amazing to behold.
Yeah, we spent a long time hashing this out. We spent a long time just coming up with the name, which is obviously very important for branding. But we've discussed all of this. I was saying the other day in the group chat, actually, how if you look at our organization on paper, which is 15 some odd people, you know, you have Catholics, you have Protestants, you have Eastern Orthodox, like Mr. Prudentialist. You have non-people, you know, just unknown. I don't actually know everyone's religion, and we do have a pagan. So this type of operation shouldn't work, right? All the wisdom that we've learned on the, you know, so-called dissident right over the last several years is like, you just can't get this level of cooperation among people of all these different backgrounds. Like, for example, our president, Red Hawk, is, you know, a original red pill pickup artist type, manosphere guy, right? Whatever you want to call that. Ryan Turnipseed's he comes from the Austrian School of Economics. He, you know, he goes to the Mises Institute for various events there. He's a pretty hardcore Lutheran Protestant, right? So on paper, none of this should work, but we have figured out how to make it work. And it's not even difficult because we've spent so much time, you know, ironing things out. But also what we really discovered is that when you meet in person at these events, all of these sort of differences between us start becoming trivial and not mattering. And that's sort of the basis for which we realized, like, hey, if we can get people connected in person more, then we can actually overcome a lot of the sort of trivialities we get into arguments online. And everyone just becomes way more productive. And you can accomplish so much more as a group rather than just sort of this collection, right? The phase we were in before of sort of this online right thing is you had a lot of like live streaming spheres. Academic Agent, for example, is a big example of this, where he sort of has a sphere around him that he sort of brings on for his shows, but there's no actual real organization there. you know, we're like, okay, well, let's actually formalize something. Let's make a real organization which provides something, an anchor for you to actually build around.
Yeah. On the matter of differences mattering, I think one key thing to remember, a way around this to some extent, is to when people fall out over some difference of whether it's the religion or whatever. I mean, there is just the hard and fast rule. We don't discuss politics or religion. That's one way. But another thing is to keep your eye on the goal. I mean, what really matters here? Because whatever your differences, you all have something in common, a concern about the future. And you know, I would hope that that would guide people back to peaceful dispute resolution. One other thing is there, you know, I don't know how much of this you want to reveal, but about the structure of the organization, is there a command structure? Is there a means, a mechanism by which to handle dispute resolution, that kind of thing? Or are the chapters very much independent and operating without a central control?
So I'll, if it's all right with you two, I think I'll take this because I remember drafting a lot of these organizational structures. All righty. So
go for it, Ryan.
Yeah, the way that this this hierarchy works is that you need a group of specifically American men above the age of 18. You need five of them. Four people to fill out the basic officer roles, treasurer, secretary, president, and vice president, and then one other person to make sure that you can actually get more than just the officers on board. After that, we will you'll basically just incorporate under our banner, legally tying you to the OGC itself, which is, as we mentioned, its own independent legal entity. And beyond that, we have left a lot of things to the liberty of these organizations, down to very, very limited restrictions on the name. We encourage people to do productive activities. Like I remember when we were pitching these things earlier on, we listed out that we have people that are interested in graveyard cleanups. We have other people that just want to like organize various different religious meetings. I know that our New England chapter is very Roman Catholic, if memory serves correctly. And I think that's a lot of how they know each other. And this is just kind of what they do. The only reason why we in the officership, in the actual parent organization, would be involved is if something goes wrong, either by us determining it, in which case we can take direct action without a caveat, basically, and change something, or we'll get asked to do that, in which case the same thing effectively plays out. We are hoping, however, that this shouldn't happen, primarily because we've been very rigorous with making sure who is associated with us and in making sure that these chapters don't just let anyone join willy-nilly. So we have the sex requirement, men above the age of 18, there's the age requirement. But then we also just have a general character assessment because since we're shooting towards mutual aid, we want people to help each other productively. Like old mutual aid associations of the past, this entails that the people being helped out and the people doing the helping basically just have to be of good character. You don't want these good, productive men wasting their resources trying to help someone who just squanders it gleefully. That's not what we are set up to do. So we have these very good character vetting processes that we've worked out to make sure that these situations where we would have to intervene hopefully just don't happen or happen very rarely. That's just basically how this will work. Other than that, very autonomous. It's the one of the American traditions across the board is having local autonomy to best suit what the locality is trying to do, what the people that make it up, and the place generally surrounding it.
Yeah, I think the character is extremely important. You know, the types of people who are involved in something really dictate how that thing is going to progress. And you can have all the rules you like after the fact. If you have the wrong types of people involved, they will find a way around whatever rules you've put into place. So what would you say of good character? Would one of you like to define that? Because I think this is the kind of stuff, obviously it should be common sense. To some extent it is, but I would like to hear it explicitly. What does it mean to be of good character? Red Hawk?
Yeah, certainly. I think the first place to start when we had this envision of, you know, of good character, right? I think there's a lot of stereotypes of, well, and maybe not so much stereotypes, depending on who you want to ask, of people on our side of things who, you know, for lack of a better word, tend to be a little spurgy and a little too edgy. And, you know, there's a time and place for edginess and everything like this. But I think a brilliant example as to why it's appropriate for you to dial back in certain circumstances when it need be done is look what's happened with Elon Musk this year and his acquisition of Twitter in the last, you know, 14 months or so. One of the things that we really are trying to do here on the Dissident Right is to, you know, influence the elites in any way that we can. And you just standing there, you know, sending pinwheels at people and, you know, doing HH and everything like that, you know, it's going to cause problems. Yeah, it's going to cause problems, you know, and yeah, I get it. You know, there's times for edgy memes and everything like this, and we can all have a good laugh and everything like that. But, you know, the time for that is past. You know, it's really time to start moving this stuff from the online into the real, and we need to be focusing on what we can do to change things. And, you know, I guess I'll throw the ball over here to Charlemagne and Ryan, because they've been discussing this quite a bit recently about the, you know, the discussion of is everybody too negative on this side of the right? Like, can we actually do anything? You know, is it all lost? You know, so I think that's my first point that I'll take. If when we were talking about, you know, people of good character, you know, you want to be respectable.
Well, for the actual like hard and fast guidelines that we have for joining the club itself under one of our chapters, or even potentially the leadership, though that's going to be an extremely rare position to just be handed, basically. The things that we have is that members can't be of the left; they have to meet those requirements. There's a basically just a fiat judgment that can be given by either the people leading the chapter or us ourselves if we determine that this person is not suited. So there's that sort of ad hoc, call it as you see it rule. But then also there's just the only thing that we have written besides that case by case determination is just that members can't be publicly broadcasting obscenity or slurs, just because we don't want anyone's reputation to be damaged in that way by joining us. Obviously, if you're joining a right-wing organization, people are going to come after you. That's going to be a form of reputation damage, but that's just the way it is. What we do not want to have happen is someone joining us and then taking a reputational hit because someone associated with us or under our banner is just being a nut job, basically. But that's specifically what we're trying to avoid. So that's what we have written.
Yeah, that's a good rule. Sometimes I get stick for having rules about this in my Telegram chat group, and it's mostly to not fall foul of UK hate speech laws. I don't allow racial slurs, but the other reason for not allowing them is that it maintains a certain level of civility. When people start behaving, when they are allowed to use that kind of language, it creates a certain kind of atmosphere, which isn't helpful. And so I completely understand what you're saying here. I think it's a good idea. I mean, basically, if you can't converse without using racial slurs, maybe there's something wrong with you. Maybe you should stop that, basically. And I understand people get angry, especially in this day and age, but there's a time and a place. there's a difference between a drunken bar room and a different situation. And we don't always want to be in a drunken bar room, basically. I understand this. Charlemagne, would you have anything to say about this?
Yeah, on the question of good character, one of the ways I approach it is just the general idea of, are you going to cause problems for your associates? Are you a felon, right? Have you been convicted of, you know, heinous crimes? I mean, it can be that simple. Are you a type of person who just starts arguments over small things or is fighting with people constantly or, you know, punches right, as we say? I mean, the language is sort of intentionally open so that people can, you know, we spent a long time actually just coming up with the specific language for these rules that are, you know, in the legal documents of incorporation, which is one of the great things is, you know, we've spent a lot of time defining this stuff so that it works for everyone and gives us the restrictions we need to maintain the organization and have all of the chapters be able to maintain themselves without being too strict. You know, for example, Ryan mentioned that members cannot be of the left. That's also very intentional language as opposed to, you know, defining very specifically, you know, what is left wing, what is right wing. This is sort of open to some level of interpretation intentionally to give us the directional guidance on what the organization is supposed to be, but also the room to not overly restrict ourselves. So, you know, yeah, good character, you know, don't just be spurging out. Don't be posting racial slurs everywhere. Just don't cause problems for people is how I look at it.
Yeah. Yeah, it all sounds good. And you've each mentioned several times that you spent a lot of time drafting this. And I think that it sounds like it was sensible. It sounds like it's time well spent because you want this to be as close to bulletproof as possible. Because, it, as I said, it really matters. This kind of stuff really, it sets the tone right at the beginning. And thereafter, it's kind of difficult to change. So yeah, especially with regard to the types of people who you let in, I think this is critical stuff. So I applaud you for taking the care with that. What could a man expect to gain from joining the Old Glory Club? Just speak in general terms. Red Hawk, do you want to take that first? Basically, why should a man join this?
Sure, absolutely. I think the first big reason why you should be joining is, I think it's really easy for people to feel alone in these times, you know, and also, back to what I was discussing before about how, you know, big America is, you know, when we were meeting together at one of these first conferences, we all were gathering in the middle of the country and, you know, we had representation from almost all 50 states. I think we had something like 42 out of the 50 states were represented or something like this when we had one of these big events and everybody came together and such. And, you know, it's important for you to find like a network of guys in real life, in your local community who you can rely on. I mean, all of us walking around here, we just know like it sucks to be hiding your power level all the time, you know, and specifically for my angle on this thing, you know, coming from like the manosphere and male camaraderie and everything like this. This is just how men form bonds. You know, we're not like women. We don't really like pick up the phone and like call somebody for 2 hours and hash out our problems for something. It's not really what we do. Men associate and talk to each other when we're actually in physical space and we're doing things together. That's how you bond. And we've had guys in our New England chapter suggest that things that they're going to start doing are, you know, like hikes or wilderness survival, things like this, you know, and we fully support that kind of stuff. I mean, I've been an outdoorsman my entire life, you know, so yeah, please go ahead and do that. These are some of the things you could be looking forward to, like a group of guys who are like-minded, people you can rely on. That's the big reason number one right there.
And moreover to just forming bonds with men that won't lynch you basically for having the incorrect ideas or the incorrect beliefs, like basically every institution staffed with normies would right now. There's sort of an expectation that these chapters will help, the people within the chapters will help each other. And beyond that, just and anywhere that you travel, so long as there will be an OGC chapter there, you can expect to find some sort of refuge, help, camaraderie, whatever it is that you are looking for, so long as the chapter has it, and it can be reasonably given. That's sort of what we're trying to build up for. Just due to the way that legal regulations work right now, we are not officially like some sort of insurance agency or whatever else that you would have to be in order to legally provide mutual aid as it is in law. But we are working towards that. So if you join right now, Beyond just what people can help you out with wherever you are and whoever you've joined up with, or wherever you're traveling, if the OGC is there, there is this future goal that we are all working towards, where we will have this very official and very prosperous net of mutual aid. So it's also the future that you would be joining for as well. Because we've done a lot of great things so far in just the year that we have been, a year and a half that we've been officially doing everything. But that's nothing compared to what we're actually working towards.
Right, Charlemagne?
Yeah, and in terms of what are you joining if you join, people ask us, how do I join? You know, what is this thing actually? So the Old Glory Club itself is the parent organization that us here and a dozen or so others are a member of. That's the sort of parent organization. You don't join that. What you do is you join a local chapter. And if there isn't a chapter, which there's only two formal ones right now and one coming in Florida, you create a chapter, right? That's on you to make a chapter in your area and get other people to come to it. We help people with that. We put them in touch. We were checking our, we were keeping track of our metrics for a while, and we've put about 100 Anons in contact with each other, over email and physically. And this actually works. People have formed chapters now. And that is how you join, is you have to join one of our chapters or you create a chapter, which is a lot of work. But we think it's worthwhile. The chapters we have in New England and Virginia have certainly thought it's worthwhile, and lots of other people have as well. And there's lots of interest in forming chapters. We get messages from people across the country. Unfortunately, right now things are very bootstrapped, just because, if someone messages us from, North Dakota or something, and they're the only person there, they're going to have to do some legwork to get this done. But if you do put in the effort to form a chapter, you're going to really have someone, and we're going to be there to support you and help you grow and that sort of thing. So that's how you join the organization, is you actually found a new sub-organization or join an existing one.
Right. Okay. That was going to be my next question. Now, if a man wanted to join, what should he expect of that process and what's required of him during that process? Would any of you like to take that?
Yes, certainly. Unless Ryan wants to take it.
Okay.
Red Hawk, why don't you give the basic overview and then I can fill in any details that might be missing.
Sure. Not a problem. Yeah, so as Ryan was alluding to earlier, the basic process is you need to get five guys IRL in your area. Now, we were mentioning how the chapters we have set right now are in Virginia and New England. So you don't need to necessarily set up a chapter for your entire state. I mean, especially out west and the part of the country, the states are massive, California is huge, Montana is huge, So you can choose to, have your chapter size however much you like. I mean, there's discussion right now of splitting up the Florida chapter into, a Miami chapter and then a Central Florida chapter as well. So we're very flexible with this kind of stuff. But you need that group of five guys together first. Shoot us an email at theoldgloryclub@gmail.com. We will be in contact with you guys to walk you through the actual legal paperwork and everything that is required. And I guess I'll take this opportunity right now to also kind of shoot down one of the criticisms we've really gotten is people are concerned with putting their actual names on physical paperwork here. And this is kind of just what you have to do at this stage of the game. We're looking for guys who need to put, some skin in the game here. And this is also a good, vetting tool for us, basically. Like, if you're going to be committed to this thing, you're actually going to sign your name on the dotted line and say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do as president of this small chapter of the Old Glory Club, of this organization, to move it forward, to advance whatever it is that your chapter wants to do. I mean, Ryan was listing many things earlier about, community service or, any other actions that our guys want to do in their area. But, and then subsequent members that you're going to have on to your chapter, they're not going to have to write their names down on like a legal paperwork or anything like that. It's just the founding members of your organization. And then if you want to collect, information from like your actual members, we're going to leave that more or less up to you guys, but that's my basic bit right there.
Right. And just to fill in just a little bit of detail, because Red Hawk just mentioned the somewhat unpopular move that we have, which is, you actually are putting your real names out there, just as everyone in the leadership has as well. So this isn't something that we've just shouldered off to the to the people below us. This is something that we have all done so that we're in together, basically. So beyond just the name and all the other things that the legal paperwork requires, we also check each of the five original founding members of the chapters, basically for their past affiliations, political, social, whatever it is, just to make sure that they aren't tainted, if you will. They're not feds, if you want to think of it that way. And we also just ask them for a brief biography, and then we try to find people to vouch for them or speak to their personal character to ensure that these people founding the chapters are the ones that are capable and also good.
I'll just intervene here. That's going about it that way will slow things down, and some people will definitely resent it, you know. But that's probably a sign that they're not up to it, you know, if they resent this, because you'll want people who understand the importance of doing this kind of thing, of making these background checks, because this is how much it matters. If you get a bad egg, a bad apple in there, it will screw up the whole thing for that chapter. So, yeah, it really matters. Sorry to interrupt.
No. I mean, that's exactly the philosophy. And the other reason for asking for these biographies and whatever else that we may ask of these original founding members of the chapters, is because we want to make sure that our identity is not going to change as we get more people involved. And this is something that's very important. The Old Glory Club, as it stands right now, and hopefully as we continue going, is not an activist organization like other groups have been on the right. We are not mobilizing people out to protest or out to put regalia on different parts of public corners and whatever else. We are mutual aid and productive focused. You know, helping each other out, making sure that everyone is safe and secure, no matter if the media or the state or whoever else tries to go after them. This is the founding principle of the organization. So that's the other utility with asking people for their biography and their other affiliations. We need to make sure that our manpower doesn't morph I know someone's going to be angry that I use that word. Our manpower does not shift to the ideals of the organization.
Yeah, indeed. This is all about setting it up so that it endures, so that it lasts. Charlemagne.
Yeah, and just in terms of, you know, people being uncomfortable with sending us their names, one, you know, because this is real and there's skin in the game and these are actual U.S. corporations, we have to have that information to put on the legal documents. So there's no way around that. But it does have a good secondary purpose in sort of finding people who are actually willing to put skin in the game and attach their, you know, name to the project. So we can work with that. And, you know, in terms of the names we have, it's only the founders of the original five founders of that chapter. Everyone else who joins an existing chapter, if you join an existing chapter in New England or Virginia right now, you're completely anonymous to us. We don't know about you. We don't want to know, frankly. Like, I don't know all of the members of all the chapters, right? I could go look up the officers of the other two chapters right now if I wanted to, but I make a point not to do that because, you know, I don't need that information in my head, to be honest. So we're interested in protecting your information. We're not going to like leak your name somewhere. We don't have them in some sort of database or something where we're keeping track of everything. It's just a matter of you have to, you know, when you're emailing us or whoever you send it, your document of incorporation, the names have got to be on there. But other than that, it's, you know, keeping it to a bare minimum. We don't want people to get in trouble. We don't want them to get doxxed. So, you know, people should be, I hope people will feel comfortable with that arrangement. And, you know, some people have thus far.
We can put this just a slightly different way to make it make sense. If us at the top of the national, of the parent chapter know who you are, and you aren't one of the original five founding members of your chapter, you've either done something very, very good or very, very poorly, one or the other.
Right, okay. Are there any other things that we should talk about here in terms of making people... obviously, the point here is to spread awareness of this, of the Old Glory Club, and hopefully to entice more people to to join it. So is there anything else that you would like to talk about here?
Well, I guess one of the first things we could talk about here is one of the other initiatives that we're looking to do here into the future is we're calling it right now a cancellation insurance, basically. So Ryan was talking about earlier about the ideas of mutual aid and such as one of the central, you know, founding tenets of the organization. And we absolutely agree with that. I mean, many people here will be familiar with Mr. George Bagby, who was on Millennial earlier. Was it this week or last week? I don't know. They all run together at this point. But he was on not too long ago. And, we helped organize a fundraiser for him when he lost his job, you know, and he was doxed and canceled, you know, from his history gig. And we raised him, was it like a $5,500? Something like that when it was all said and done, you know. So that was like our prototype case for this. And now we're looking to do that into the future here as well.
Excellent. Yeah, sorry, Charlemagne, go.
Yeah, as you mentioned, what we're calling cancellation insurance is sort of a long-term project that we would like, the Old Glory Club organization itself to negotiate with an insurance company and be able to offer people down the line. That's one of our big projects that will, you know, make everything just more secure for people. I mean, imagine if you could sign up for an insurance plan at a reasonable price that would actually protect you from being canceled and, you know, losing your income. That would be a huge boon to everything all of us are trying to do. This is a long-term plan, but it is, we do have specific aims we're looking to do with the organization long-term. And I also wanted to highlight that we're not just another podcasting group or another live streaming group or something like that, or another activist organization. We have a Substack. We do live streams. We do this because a lot of our founding members are, you know, content creators, and that's what we do. And this is how we can bring attention to our organization. This is how we can, you know, raise funds to get off the ground. But that's not what we are fundamentally. That's one of the means we use in order to fund the Old Glory Club. But people should not look at us and think that we're just, you know, just another group of podcasters. That's not fundamentally what we're doing. What we're doing is really something new that hasn't been seen before in our scene in recent years.
And I might also add that the talents that we have available in the leadership is quite something. We've been emphasizing throughout the stream that we are a legal entity. We're actually doing business. We're going about things very officially, and we actually have people that are equipped to deal with that. So it's behind the scenes. It's also been very. It's inspired a sense of optimism within me, seeing how well everything works in the background as well as what gets put to the public. So that's something also that's quite wonderful about the organization as it's developed.
Yeah, I think in a landscape like today, it's nice to see something developing that is, it's like the flower in Hiroshima, the first flower that grows, something that can be a source of strength in the future, something that's good, something that's healthy. So I think this all sounds, you know, like a great idea. You also wanted to talk about the state of America today, who would want to take that topic? Because I think this is relevant to why such an organization as this is needed. Red Hawk.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think the first place for us to start here is just how, you know, my other guys on the panel here might be able to, share this opinion as well, but it just feels like since the Biden occupation of the White House came in a couple of years ago, America just, everything just feels off when you're walking around. There's just something in the air here. It just seems like, you know, lazy isn't the correct word for it, or, you know, maybe defeated sounds like a better term or something like that. But you just look around on people's faces over here and everyone just looks depressed. Nobody's happy. Inflation has skyrocketed through the roof, almost 10% at this point since Biden's been in office. The grocery bills, gas bills, everything's been going crazy. I think a lot of people outside of America are more focused on the general state of, you know, American foreign policy these days. I mean, and obviously we had big stories like Ukraine, Afghanistan, Israel, and such that were kind of taking center stage this year. But you know, at home, America is looking pretty rough right now at home, inflation-wise. And then also the nonsense that's going on with our completely open southern border, where we have 10,000 people running through a day. And those are just the people that they're catching, you know. So this is more reason why, more than ever, our guys need to start getting together, you know.
Yeah, this is the thing. I mean, America now is a network of racial collectives and ethnic collectives, and white men are the last to catch up with this. I mean, it's something that we have lamented for quite a few years, that we are so individualistic that we don't seem to understand the need, the danger that we're in. And as things heat up, obviously there are going to be many stories of white men getting, you know, screwed in the courts, abused by other groups, and so forth. So I think any sort of organization in that sense is useful and is a worthy goal. Charlemagne, would you have anything to say about this?
Yes, I echo Red Hawk's sentiments. I mean, one of the big things is how slow everything seems to move now. Not only are things more expensive, but it takes so long to get anything done in this country at this point, particularly like large scale projects. And I mean, like construction, plumbing, electrical, this sort of thing. You know, you if you need contractors to do work for you, if you need to ship something off or repair anything like that, it takes forever. You can feel not just the hit in your wallet, but also just how much more difficult it is to just get work done by competent people in the United States. And this is a big, I mean, we've talked about the competency crisis, right? But it's not just a political meme. Like, you can feel it. And we recognize the need to have something to protect us from that worsening situation, because I think everyone does understand that it is only going to get worse. And that's, I think, partly why people are so depressed, because there's no obvious way out of this. You know, we look at what just happened this week with the breaking news about, you know, the Colorado State Supreme Court attempting to ban President Trump from even being on the ballot. This is an unprecedented step in American history. This constitutional clause has literally never been applied before. The constitutional clause banning someone from holding office if they're found guilty of insurrection against the United States. Not even even after the Civil War, no one was convicted of treason or insurrection. So this is a big deal what they're doing now in order to maintain their brittle but iron grasp on power. And it's, you know, people are afraid. People are afraid of the future because they don't know what's going to happen. One benefit, you know, people like us actually have, although it can be kind of grim seeing things for what they are, is at least you have some idea of what's going to happen. You know, I think normies are much more terrified because it's all just a fog to them that they don't understand. I think a lot of us, you know, I've certainly seen this type of message mostly years ago now when I did my, you know, neo-reactionary videos. When someone's eyes are opened and, you know, you help them open them to something profound, it's a very positive experience for them. But most people are just confused. And that's really led to this, you know, state of melancholy that's like a fog across the entire country.
And it absolutely was not like this under President Trump. You know, I mean, a lot of guys in our circles will argue about, like, oh, Trump's actual impact of when he was in office and, you know, well, what actually did he get done? The State Department fought him every single step of the way. You know, there were circuit court judges, you know, fighting him every 5 minutes. But the energy of the average American was totally different under Trump's administration. You know, people were happy. Like it sounds like trivial when we talk about it, but I feel like people were just happy to go to work. You know, when Trump was in office, people had, you know, a sense of American optimism that the American dream was still achievable. And you just look around here and everyone just seems depressed. You know, it's like a direct mirror of Biden in the White House, you know.
And that bears out in very important statistics as well. One of the favorite things that that has been visualized in at least the last few months was when I came across it. Was that white births were up under Trump just by him being in office. And basically, as soon as he gets kicked out of office, you see the birth trend line just immediately plummet. That's a very real indicator. Why would that be the case? Well, obviously, there's something to your leadership actually instilling a spirit of survival or life at all. To where if you just have incompetent, terrible, evil, or whatever else leaders, it will just kill a culture. It will make it not want to perpetuate itself any longer. It's a very interesting thing to observe, at least with that. So like that's a very tangible thing, and with wide reaching impact that happened as a result of Trump being there, that is no longer the case now. But in regards to this question about something being wrong in America, I have a sense that a lot of people now lose a sense of time. This is what a few OGC people were talking about just last night. In 2003, federal sodomy laws were repealed. And then in 8 years ago, just from today, 8 years ago, you saw gay marriage was federally legalized. And then it just took less than a decade between that last event and this month, basically, to where there is now public expressions of sodomy in the Senate chambers. This is a rapidly escalating decline. Things are going wrong, and they're going wrong fast, and it's only getting faster. So I have a feeling it might have to do with the laws impacting society and culture around us. That basic bulwark of the law is not it's not there anymore to hold it up. In fact, it's actively being used to destroy and disintegrate everything that was old and traditional.
This is happening rapidly. And I think it's dizzying. I'm not surprised that there's that atmosphere. I mean, I saw America just before Trump got in. So it was the closing months of Obama's presidency after 8 years in the White House. And even then, there was a sense of listlessness about young white men that I would meet. I remember in Seattle, I was smoking back then. And I was standing there on the street just smoking, and young guys would pass me and I'd get talking to them. And so many of them seemed lost. It was a very notable thing, actually. And I'm not surprised that Trump's presidency had some sort of effect in alleviating that. But Biden, yeah, I mean, it's been absolutely surreal. And it was surreal even before he started. You know, his campaign in 2020.
Yeah, would have been 2020. Yeah,
that was with the masks and these auditoria that seemed to be empty. Really weird stuff, and then with the BLM kneeling and all that. I mean, it seemed really just surreal is the only word I can think of. So if that, and then with Kamala as the vice president, so if that is the way it went, if that's how the presidency has proceeded, I can only imagine that young white men today must feel shell-shocked.
Yes, I remember when Biden took the oath of office and I thought about the Trump years, I remember thinking that, you know, this is going to be a really long 4 years of this man in office. It's going to be, you know, miserable, and who knows what they're going to do. The weird thing about it, though, is it hasn't felt long. It feels like it's passed in the blink of an eye. Not for the reason you might think, though, not because it feels like time is flying, but it feels like time is now this just miasma. It's like time is not even just stopped, but you just sort of lose your sense of time. I think partially because we're just it almost feels like we're losing our sense of history, I guess. I mean, the only thing I can compare it to is I imagine like this is how it must have felt in the interwar years in Germany, where it feels like there is no more time passing. There's no forward and backwards. You're just in this like temporal swamp where it's hard to even keep track of things anymore, because it's hard to even put your finger on exactly what it is. I guess the evil of the administration's weird like that is it's not this direct tyranny. It's more like this disease that you can feel constantly eating away at everything. Red Hawk, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was basically just going to mimic much of what you were just saying there. You know, it's just... It's just so weird to describe, because, you know, you look at somebody like Tim Pool or something like that, who's constantly talking about how, tomorrow's going to be the next civil war and the Democrats are doing this and we're going to change everything in the world because now there's a right wing version of Yelp that has come out this week or some other bullshit or whatever the hell he's talking about these days. But, you know, to us, it's just like I've barely paid attention to, you know, like the actual goings on of like the decrees from Biden in the White House because I don't have to. You know, the country, you could just feel it walking outside, you know, like one of the other things I think, and Charlie kind of mentioned this with the competency crisis and such and how it's difficult to get things. I mean, you know, it's been a classic talking point for a long time that wages have stagnated and such. But you look over here, I mean, a lot of the youth in America are just simply like they're not working anymore. They don't go out. They don't go to the bars. They're not even having sex. You know, so what are they even doing? And that's having a cascade effect on all the other job industries as well, because, you know, it just feels like everybody's just mailing it in. You know, their hopes and dreams are absolutely crushed. And I think the average American, like, I think they really do know that something screwy went on in 2020. Definitely at this point, you know, election wise and everything like that, you know, even like I don't know about you guys, but I've never really met like a diehard like Biden supporter or somebody like this, you know, someone who's just like all in all out for Joe Biden. Like, oh, I'm really excited for him. You know, listen to what he's done. Isn't it great? You know, you just barely hear about the guy, but you just see his impact everywhere you go. You know, everyone's mailing it in because they can't really get fired from their jobs because there's nobody to come in and replace them if they do a shitty job. And the wages aren't increasing, so nobody really cares about, you know, doing their job either. You know, but it's just like what we're talking about here. There's just this miasma in the air.
Yeah, well, white Americans in particular, you know, don't feel like their country or anything is working for them at all. So it's like, why even invest in the future at this point? You know, just phone it in, basically. It's like when there's nothing to invest in, well, what are you going to do? Of course, you're going to, you know, sort of slip into this, you know, a more melancholic, just like, you know, barely getting along state, because there's no indication that any effort you put in is actually going to be, you know, pay off. If anything, it just means there's more they're going to take from you down the line.
Right. And I'm in Oklahoma, so this isn't necessarily representative of the rest of the country, but it is still interesting nonetheless. Even the left-wing, like, white Oklahomans have this fundamental idea that they are going to get denied various different managerial or bureaucratic promotions or positions or whatever because they are white. They aren't filling out the diversity requirement. Even the left wing in this heartland part of the country implicitly recognizes this. They'll make jokes about it. It's not just some edgy right wing thing anymore. And I don't mean to like have some sort of cheesy segue, but everything that we've all been mentioning for the past 20 minutes now, this is something good that the OGC is actually trying to revert at least one piece at a time. Is actually trying to reintroduce some sort of positive outlook and productive outlook back into things. Because to be perfectly honest, if we don't do it, there are precious few other groups and people in the country right now that are. Everything is either causing the doom spiral that we're seeing around us, or they are recognizing it and despairing over it. There are few groups that are actually trying to keep some sort of positive outlook alive and actually work towards something feasible and productive. For these heritage Americans.
Yeah, we're an anti-entropic organization, and although, you know, we've been gloomy here because of the subject matter,
only for 10 minutes.
You spoke only about, for 10, yeah. That is true. But if you look at our Substack, for example, it very intentionally has a very positive editorial policy, and we try to keep the streams funny and this sort of stuff. We don't actually take like a gloomy attitude in the content we produce for the club. So we're fully cognizant of all of the problems that this country has, but we believe in maintaining a sort of anti-entropic attitude toward it, because, you know, everything else is only leaning in one direction. Nobody is providing something that young white men especially can feel like they can actually invest in that's worth their time. And, you know, we believe that our organization is something that they can feel like it's worth building.
See, it seems to me that one of the key problems here is that life has become so dominated by corporations who have their set ways of doing things, and any deviation from that needs permission from God knows how many levels up, and the answer will almost certainly be no. So for white men who love to innovate, and you know, you make something your own, you derive fulfillment from something by making it your own, and you make it your own by innovating. And if you're not allowed to innovate, then you can't make it your own. So it's going to be perpetually unfulfilling. And I think this is one of the reasons why corporate America, well, corporate life all over the West is so awful. It's so turgid that, yeah, sure, there's sometimes a workshop here and there. But generally speaking, it's extremely restrictive of the male impulse to, you know, expand, explore, experiment, conquer, dominate, innovate. And so no wonder they're filling up with women who are far more happy in an environment like that. And no wonder white men are so detaching from that and so depressed. I think this is true of life in general now. It's very restrictive. And so I think white men are crying out for something that they can make their own, something that they can innovate, something that they can expand. So I think that's maybe something. Would any of you have something to say about what I've just said?
Well, unfortunately, I've been having to learn the ins and outs of a business as it's taught in theory, because that's just where my undergraduate degrees are in, is they're both business subjects. And you have it, you've hit the nail right on the head. The sort of managerialism deprives anyone from taking real ownership over the work that they are doing. And it's a very unnatural concept. It's why it can't last. That's why it's collapsing around us. It's actively driving away the most productive populations that the world has ever known throughout its history, because they get no fulfillment from it. And they can't provide it under this managerial system. And I guess this is something else that there's precious few institutions of in this country, non-managerial institutions. And that's something that we most certainly are not. We're actively encouraging people to do productive things in their own localities that have real, tangible effects on them and the people around them. And that's not just so that they can, you know, just say they've done good and mark it off like some morality checklist or something like that. It's because it's fulfilling. And it's actually centering your life around something that is meaningful, worthwhile, and if you will, eternal. Being able to say that you produced something and caused some sort of change is much better and more filling and fulfilling, rather, and has been seen throughout history, as opposed to this new modern ideal of you raised productivity among a certain subsection of a corporation by X percentage points. That's a very dead and sterile system. So I'm going to stop relating that back to the corporation now, just because I don't want to seem like I'm shoehorning it into everything. But this is very much a spiritual problem in the U.S. as things have developed, for whatever reason it may be. This is a big argument over why has managerialism and the corporations and everything else developed the way it has. But the thing that comes to mind most clearly was when all of these boomer conservatives a few months ago were ripping on this one girl who posted a TikTok about how terrible it was to work at these corporations and just have this 9-to-5 corporate life, where your life was centered around the corporation and the work you were doing there. You know, she was breaking down on camera, posted online, and these boomer conservatives all came out in droves and legions across all the different social media platforms saying, "Look at this stupid Zoomer, we're so doomed, this is the next generation, they can't even handle a day's worth of work." And every sensible person looked at that video, and for multiple reasons said, this is the correct response. This is the natural response that any young woman would have. Men are somewhat different because they're actually supposed to be in the workplace doing things like that, but not in this way. So the fact that the younger generations are having this natural allergic reaction to the way that corporate lifestyles have emerged, I think is something that's actually heartening. It's one of the few things you can say about the Zoomer generation, that they actually have a normal human impulse left in them to reject this allergically. So I guess that's a little bit of hope for the future nestled in this very doomful analysis.
Well, you see, it's got worse since the boomers were there. A lot of them have retired now. A lot of them retired 10 years ago. I don't think they really realize, and I don't want to go on about the boomers, right? I'm sorry, but it's a reality that we have to confront here. I think a lot of them don't understand what the workplace is like now, just like they don't understand being at school is like now, or what being a young adult is like now. I don't think they understand how awful the working environment now is. I mean, they can remember when smoking was banned in the offices, you know, like in 2005, and that was towards the end of their time there. What they don't know about is the insane behavioral protocols, diversity stuff, the anti-white, the open anti-white culture that is rampant in not just in the corporate sector but in the whole workplace now. So I think they just don't understand, and I don't like saying that. I don't actually want to, you know, harp on the boomers, because heaven knows, you know, we're all going to be old one day. We're all going to be in our 60s, 70s, 80s, if we're lucky. But I get it, you know, you fall out of touch. But I think the point being made here is a very valid one, that they just didn't understand that young woman. And I remember I saw probably the same video. I think it was the same video that I saw. And I just thought, yeah, why are you there? This isn't right. It isn't right for a young woman to be in that sector and struggling. It's not natural, but it's not also not natural for men. That's an important thing here, because especially with the Old Glory Club being for men. Red Hawk, do you want to chime in here?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I could definitely chime in on the women in the workplace and everything like that and such. You know, as I mentioned before, my foundation comes from Manosphere Circles and such. And yeah, I mean, you know, I don't want to turn this into like a woman bashing kind of thing here, but a large part of why, you know, the corporate life and corporate America really sucks right now is because it's being increasingly more and more dominated by women. And, you know, I know there's many discussions in our circles about, you know, the roles for men to, you know, go ahead and stand up and such and fix the problems. And yes, I definitely do agree with, you know, the general sentiment of that claim here. But, you know, at the end of the day, it really needs to come down to, and women really need to start doing this kind of stuff, especially, you know, some of the older ones in our circles. They need to spend way more of their time trying to steer women away from the lies that feminism has taught them, instead of just talking about men all the time. You know, yes, I get it. The men are not the same as like our grandfathers were, or our forefathers were. Yes. We all understand it. You know, yeah, a lot of them are addicted to drugs and video games and are depressed. Yes. We understand these things, but listen here, you know, feminism has had 100 years at this point to teach men a better way, and they've completely failed at this. So now it's time to step back. The men are in charge. The men are talking now, and the men are going to fix the male issues. And you've got to go in and fix your own house here. You know, like, good luck trying to get a 21-year-old Zoomer girl to try and listen to, you know, one of us to talk to her about, you know, how feminism is horrible and everything like this. And she's just going to look at you and say, well, who the hell are you to talk to me, white man? You know, we're not going to get anywhere doing that. You know, I feel like it's going to be much more productive for the men to fix the men and the women to fix the women. And I've been saying this for years now.
Yeah, this is a bit of a tangent, but this very strident thing that's emerged
sort of around the longhouse discussion is very irritating. Like this idea that the men just need to man up and fix everything. It's like, well, one, that's literally illegal now. Like, let's just be real. We live in a you know, gynocracy, as Red Hawk likes to call it. It's not a matter of just man up and fix it, right? I think you're actually onto something here. It's like the few women we do have in our sphere. You had, I believe, two on the show this year, on Millennial. The best thing you can possibly do is just convince other young women to stop being feminists. And pretty much, you know, every woman is now, right? Whether or not you even realize it as a woman.
And most of the men, too.
Yes, like you... And not just, this isn't just an ideology thing. It's a, look, you need to husband, marriage, kids in your early 20s. That's the goal. No college, none of this other nonsense. That is the number one thing you can be doing for the quote unquote movement as a woman. It's not, you know, it's not being an e-girl and making political videos, as entertaining as that can be, or even as useful as it can be. The women are going to have to fix the women issues because the men cannot do it now. Because like Red Hawk said, at best, you'll just be ignored. At worst, you'll be prosecuted by the government.
Yeah, and in the middle, you'll just be mocked. It's not, as you say, it's not something that is... What are they? I mean, it's a stupid thing to ask us to do. Like, we're supposed to take control of them. It's completely impossible. But I also agree that preaching at them doesn't really work either. This is something that older women have to get in on, especially to say, don't make the mistakes that I made. It's difficult to do that. It's difficult to admit that you've made mistakes. But I think you know, we all have. I mean, I will gladly tell young men, don't make the mistakes that I made. I think it's just a thing you have to do. But also, if there's an older woman who hasn't made those mistakes, who's taken a good course in life, then yeah, she should stand as an example. I don't really understand what's unappealing about the classic homesteading thing, where the guy is in charge, but the woman runs the house. They work together on things, they do things together, and they have kids and raise them together. I don't really see what's objectionable about that, unless you're just looking to cause trouble, or unless you're just a feminist in disguise. Red Hawk.
Well, yeah, you know. I mean, Charlie was talking about this a moment ago, but yeah, it's not just the best thing that you could be doing for our movement as a woman to steer women away from feminism. It's the role that you as a woman in the right wing spaces are most equipped to deal with, you know, by leaps and bounds, I might add. You know, I was referencing earlier about how, you know, like, you know, what's going to happen when one of us like, you know, talks to, you know, a woman on the street or a woman online or even somebody in our own families and such like this, when, you know, you're fighting the feminist dragon that is, you know, the entire media system, the entire college education system, all of social media, the government, you know, actual like laws and such like this that are discriminatory against men, the whole divorce court system. You know, you want guys to go pick up the sword and fight this thing here, and you're just going to sit on the sidelines the entire time and say, men, go and do it. It's like, no, like if you want to be like super supportive woman here, and that's like your whole, you know, calling card here on the right is to be supportive and submissive and such. It's like, well, like go out and do that. Like go start a women's group or literally anything like that. That is where you're going to be the most useful. I don't need a woman on the online right to do another like dissection of some like esoteric book or something like that. No, like that's not where you're going to be most useful. No.
Yeah. I mean, we can't fix that problem, right? We can create a fraternal organization. We can help men become better men, but fundamentally this civilizational issue of feminism is in the female domain simply because of the way the power balance has worked out right now. It is just something that women are going to have to do a lot of the heavy lifting on in terms of setting women straight, because we can only do what we're equipped to do. And at the moment, it's set up these fraternal organizations that can help other men. You know, we can't fix all of the problems at one time.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah, exactly.
There is no patriarchy. You know, if there were a patriarchy, then we could solve this. But there isn't, so we can't.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, you, one individual guy, can actually be pretty successful, you know, converting maybe one woman, if she's in your frame, to adopt like your political opinions and such, and save her from the feminist trap. You know, I mean, of course, there's plenty of success stories like this, but that's one drop in a huge ocean here, you know, and not only that, that requires a lot of work, and it also requires a specific kind of mindset and specific skills and specific education in how to be a man and how to lead in a relationship that all men across the entire Western world, regardless of if you're, you know, based in trad, no matter who you are not born with these skills at all. And there's no social institutions anymore to help you along with those skills. You know, like a lot of people like to talk about, you know, the patriarchy of, you know, the past and such like this. And there were systems in place there to help men, you know, get the education of what it's like to actually, you know, for lack of a better word, lead a woman, because women do need to be led, and nobody is there to teach guys about it anymore. I mean, this is why I'm I often get accused and attacked all the time for why do I support organizations like the Manosphere? And I agree, like, almost all of it is completely cringe at this point, and most people should not be paying attention to it at all. But the certain, bright spots in that movement are, as far as I'm concerned, essential for guys at this point in the age, because the church isn't going to help you with this. The government isn't going to help you with it. Your family members aren't going to help you with it. We're in three generations of divorce households now at this point. It's the blind leading the blind. And so what happened, the last place the guys could possibly go, it was Reddit, you know, because they weren't getting, instructions from their family, their communities, their priests, none of this kind of stuff. It was information that was lost to us.
Yeah, no, my hope is, perhaps some of the wives of our members or other inspired women might create sister organizations, similar to how we're operating the Old Glory Club to help, the women in the modern world deal with their own problems too, because they do need the leadership. In order to get anything done, you always have to have elites organizing, right? We understand that really well, but it does have to be women organizing female societies in order to help solve these issues. And, you know, America has a great tradition of that as well.
Yeah, that is true. I think another shortcoming with the movement is that we tend to, and this is something that I see especially among the women, is that we tend to focus on character flaws, like, well, you've not done this or you've not done that. And I think it's much more important to say, well, okay, but what is actually being advised here? What is the advice? Regardless of, because everyone has, flaws. And everyone has made mistakes, most of us. And if we're old enough to have done it, then we've done it. So it's, I think this is a sort of moral purity thing that gets, and it basically means that we don't need to take anyone's advice. We don't need to change. We don't need to better ourselves. We can just find a flaw with that person. It is actually very bitchy. It's very female. But again, I don't have it in for the women in the movement. Or the men in the movement. I just think we need to find better ways of communicating, especially with Twitter, because Twitter is just such a bitch fest. It's such a gossip, like soap opera kind of thing. This kind of thing doesn't help. I think we should just think about our own lives. What are we doing to help others and ourselves? And not comment so much on other people's choices, because in the end, it's up to them to change. So I think to get it back to the main topic here, how does the Old Glory Club fit into the kind of stuff that we've been talking about? I think it sounds like a sort of oasis from the frenzy of social media to some extent, but also as a practical resource and a way for meant to collaborate on things. Would that be accurate?
That would be extremely accurate, and it's not just an oasis, it's one that's actively encroaching on the other things outside of the oasis as well. That's part of the good thing about it. We are not playing necessarily the defensive for our traditional societies and heritages, like every other organization has before us and have subsequently lost as a result. We're actually trying to take productive activity measures and projects to actively rekindle what it is that we've lost in the past few generations. We're trying to make sure that we can beat back modernity, not through any sort of activism or petty violence or whatever else, but by actually kindling a civilization. This is something that I think is very unique about America when looking at the other regions and cultures within the dissident sphere. America actually has people that will hold to and cling to faith, and these other intangibles that seem very irrational now in the modern day, but are nonetheless necessary for a thriving civilization. These Americans that cling to these things are still capable of producing a culture. They're still capable of propagating themselves and their progeny for generations. They just have to not be snuffed out by all the machinery around us. That I think is where we fit into all of this. We're not just an oasis. We do fulfill that role, but we're actively rekindling a civilization here. I think is what the hopeful long term effect will be after we can ensure that everyone is independent and secure, financially secure. After we make sure that people have what they need, I think that's what we're going for.
Yes, and also practically speaking, I mean, we've made recommendations on, you know, behalf of people we know to help them get employment, help them find jobs. Anons have, you know, gotten in touch with other Anons for this sort of thing. So you can imagine how useful a resource this will be to people when, you know, we do eventually hopefully have a chapter, multiple chapters in every single state. You know, the chapters are sort of organized around states at the moment, but they're going to get much more refined as more chapters emerge. And, you know, the ability to be networked through us with every single other Old Glory Club chapter in the entire country is going to be extremely useful in the future for competent people to actually find employment. So, you know, we're doing practical things for people that really matter. And, you know, we're not just talking, and we're not just putting out content or things like that.
All right. There was a nice comment here, a super chat from the Geezer. Much respect to the ethos of the Old Glory Club. In the words of the great Jonathan Bowden, patriotism is the real socialism because it binds people together in their difference. I wish you chaps all the success to come. Good Yule and lucky tidings for the year ahead. Oh, thank you very much. And Coro Games says, great conversation. Keep up the good work. So to end with then, I suppose the most obvious question is, how can men get in touch with the Old Glory Club?
Well, the best way to get in contact with us is to send us an email directly to theoldgloryclub@gmail.com. And in that email, just, you know, be specific about what you want. We offer many services like putting anons, you know, in contact with each other in your local area. So you might be able to form a chapter if there already isn't one in your locality. We can also walk you through the process like we were discussing earlier about actually forming a chapter in your area. And we also, you know, take guest submissions as well for our Substack. We've been publishing, you know, like T.R. Hudson, one of our guys recently, we published one of his pieces on our Substack and such. So, you know, anything like that that you can help us out with, or, you know, please indeed reach out to us. We'll be happy to put you in contact.
All right. Excellent. Well, this has been a very good stream. I find it interesting. I hope that young men in America, well, not just young men, but men of all ages in America, are intrigued by this and get in contact with you. It sounds like a great idea.
There is also, I believe, one other way that people will be able to at least see what we're doing, if not directly find the ways to reach out to us. And hopefully Charlemagne should be able to take it from there.
Yeah, I think we sent you URLs to our website. We do actually have a website up and running now, which we can say is in an open beta. We're developing it, but you should definitely bookmark the website. It's got a link to the Substack on it. It's got a little bit of info on our chapters. It's got, you know, a sort of a splash page for events. And as, you know, more events come up through the Old Glory Club and chapters, you know, it'll be posted there. So, yeah, you can go to theoldgloryclub.com and check out the website. You know, I should have put the email address on the website. I'll do that right after. So, yeah, just please bookmark that and, you know, check it out every now and then as we expand the organization.
All right, excellent. I was just pasting that into the live chat. I'll add it to the video description, and it will be there on the Millennial website as well. Excellent. Well, this has been a very good stream. So thank you, Red Hawk, Ryan, Turnipseed, and Charlemagne for representing the Old Glory Club.
Thank you very much for having us, Woz. It was an honor.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you again. It was wonderful to be back.
Absolutely.
All right, fantastic. Okay, then we'll end it there. I'll be back in about half an hour with the final stream tonight, which is with the alternative hypothesis. In the meantime, please consider getting in contact with the Old Glory Club. And bye-bye for now.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The journey must continue, but it needs your help. Bidding on this year's NFT ends on the 30th. It's your chance to own this one-of-a-kind commemorative piece, lovingly hand-coded by Millennial Woz himself. All aboard. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the journey and spread the word.